Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Should we talk about tin fish? Or does the podcast have to be about news things? We've been talking about it all morning. No, boring. There has been a test. They've been testing the caffeine. Oh, you've got it there. The amount of caffeine in high street coffees.
Yeah. And headline in the Daily Mail today, which is a Wednesday, page 3. So how much caffeine is in your favourite high street cup? By Sean Poulter. Morning, Sean. Those looking for a pick-me-up in their morning coffee may not be getting the oomph they expected. It has emerged.
I'm sorry, I am not very good at reading.
God, you're
that.
So bad at reading. You bored the piss out of me already on
but
that story. Can I just tell them what the story's
about?
Yeah, you they've been testing. Someone's decided, for the sake of getting a story, it's presumably some coffee company, have decided to test the amount of caffeine in high street coffees, and they discovered that, what, Costa has the highest amount of caffeine?
Now, let's have a look at this.
Don't slow it all down. Let's get some fucking energy in here. You don't drink coffee. You don't even know. This is pathetic.
Really,
so how much caffeine is in your favourite high street cup? Those looking for a pick-me-up in their morning coffee may not be getting the oomph they expected. It has emerged. Some high street chains are serving cappuccinos so high in caffeine that they might pose a risk to pregnant women and their unborn babies. I, of course, have had 2 cups of coffee and you've had none.
I've had no cups of coffee.
Risk to women and their unborn babies. Researchers found dramatically different caffeine levels in the drink served by Britain's biggest high street chains. At its best, a dose of caffeine boosts alertness, elevates the mood and can improve performance for those physical jobs. However, too much can have negative consequences. The NHS, which should be spending more time hiring nurses, recommends that pregnant women drink less than 200 milligrams of caffeine a day.
What's that equivalent to?
How do you measure it?
Yeah, how do you measure it?
How do you measure the milligrams
of caffeine? Yeah.
You're pregnant.
Yes,
you're
exactly.
Tired.
Yeah.
You're not allowed anything. I'm allowed a cup of coffee. How do you measure? What do you expect pregnant women to do? Boil the caffeine, boil their cup of coffee down to a powder and then weigh. A study by Which found startling caffeine differences, okay? So the consumer champion looked at the caffeine content of blah, blah, blah. Experts found Costa offers the strongest cappuccino with 325 milligrams of caffeine, 5 times as much as the 66 milligrams in Starbucks. Greg's offered the second highest of the cappuccino. So it's hard to tell. If you're going out to buy a coffee, theoretically, you'd want the most caffeine. It's like labelling calories and things, and it's meant to be low. But historically, through human life, when you go hunting and foraging for food, farming for food or buying food, you're trying to buy the most calories, aren't you? The idea that we've got to a place where you have to buy things with fewer calories so you don't get fat, weird.
It's interesting that Starbucks has the lowest caffeine content, because Starbucks is American and Americans famously love very weak sort of shitty coffee, don't they?
I was at Sam's football yesterday and two of the dads are American. And I overheard, because obviously we don't stand anywhere near them, we all stand, the English dads and a couple of Italians, and the Americans stand, and their kids are both very good, but I heard them...
Actual Americans, that's quite
rare. Actual Americans, and their kids are really, really good at football.
Okay.
And then they're
soccer.
Lovely, they're lovely guys, soccer. They're lovely guys, but no, I heard them having a conversation saying, have you got real coffee yet? Because they've just arrived in America. Yeah, we got a drip machine only yesterday. Oh my God, you got to come around and get some Java. They've got a drip machine, okay, which doesn't exist here anymore. It's the 70s thing, like a Kona, the thing with a filter.
Yeah,
it makes coffee paler than my first piss of the morning. It drip, 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 it goes in. But it just tastes of filter paper. That's what Americans drink. But anyway, so you're quite right. Costa is what? Is Costa not American?
That's a really good question.
We don't know. It probably
sounds
is too.
Spanish, doesn't it? But who knows?
They've really sold that one to you. And they're delicious. Yeah. Costa coffee.
Yeah.
So anyway.
And then Greggs.
The point is that people go and drink their coffee. And
Greggs, keeping builders going. All right, Greggs. Oh, yes.
So the Greggs actually comes out of the machine with six sugars. And yeah. Big coffee, six sugars, eight sausage rolls.
Eight vegan sausage rolls.
Job's a mighty fine one. Precisely. So, and also, like Pret coffee, I know people like it, but that's low down as well. Mm-hmm. That it's coffee as an afterthought, not good. All that coffee is horse piss anyway. It's all undrinkable. It's all sort of...
It's all disgusting and making everybody fat and it should be banned.
Grainy and burnt and horrible.
And I don't,
but
and
the point about the yeah. thing is that they're measuring the amount of caffeine, and really, these people who are going to buy coffee from these coffee shops, in theory, they are feeding a caffeine addiction, of which they're quite proud. Oh, I just need my coffee. You think they would go to the one with the highest amount of caffeine, wouldn't they? Presumably it's a good thing if it's high in caffeine.
Yeah, but what's your column there? Your column is that high street coffee is all disgusting and should be banned.
You're not addicted to caffeine, you're just a twat, is my sort of...
Because
they all think they are. They all go, oh, I've got to get my coffee, I've got to get my Java. But
exactly.
I'm
an animal before my first cup of coffee.
Exactly. Which is.
But first coffee, all
it's,
that crap,
it's, yeah. That's the thing that was Garfield, who was always an animal till he had his coffee, wasn't
he? Yeah, but he was doing it in 1981.
Exactly, as a joke.
And he's still doing it in 2023.
But it's a false addiction, isn't it?
Is it? I don't know. No, it's not. I mean, this week I was writing a piece about treats and about treat culture. And for it, I interviewed our friend Henry Dumble, because he's also the author of the National Food Strategy. And he's very interesting about these sorts of things. And he was talking about repeat behaviours, addictions. He was talking about smoking addiction. He was talking about, you know, sugar addiction, all of that kind of thing. And he was talking about how you can create an addiction, a need within yourself, which will heighten the pleasure of the thing, right? So if you are not addicted to cigarettes or alcohol or sugar or caffeine, and you have that thing, it's okay and perfectly nice. If you have created an addiction within yourself, the thing is not only a nice thing, it is also sating an addictive need within yourself, which makes it extra nice.
Yes, and that is a very interesting point, and it leads into the thing that I think about coffee generally, which is it's a fake addiction. It's addiction glamour, it's addiction light. Mm. So there was obviously heroin chic with the models, and it was never really chic to be on Smack. But if it was, if you were kind of Amy Winehouse, that sort of thin, emaciated, oh man, you're kind of opting out of society, you have so little, I just need a fag and I just need a line of coke, man, and shoot up from the skag.
But they were always like that at school. They were pathetic.
Yes.
Not with the skag, but
no,
with
they
the
were
fags.
The skag. There was a boy I really, really liked, and he was a lovely guy. He was a proper goth with a hardness coat. And he's now like went evangelical
a
Christian.
What coat?
A hardness coat.
What the fuck is
so
that?
You didn't have a hardness
that
coat.
That's so 80s.
It's an 80s thing. The great Adam Buxton with the world's most successful podcast, Adam's always been very funny about hardness. He one year in 1984, he came back from the summer holidays and he'd bought a hardness coat, and he was quite shameful about hardness coats. Madness would wear your start. That's what Suggs was always wearing. One, it's a sort of knee length herringbone coat.
Oh, like a Peaky Blinders coat.
Sort of, yeah. It was
not a leather blazer.
No. Right. It's the coat, and we just called it a hardness coat. And
okay.
Madness would wear them with an 18-hole DM,
yeah.
Drainpipe trousers, white T-shirt, you know, pork pie hat, and yeah. then a coat open. It's just a hardness coat. It's not. It's more North London than that. It's like it's a hardness coat. You don't mess with someone. You don't fuck with someone in a hardness coat. And it's like it's not just to keep you warm. It's like you keep your fags in one pocket, your backy, your right, you keep Riz in the other side.
But Suggs has always got a rolled up newspaper in his pocket.
Oh, Suggs has got a sort of Big Mac in one pocket and his harmonica.
I do love Suggs. He lives around here. I love Suggs.
But he's the inventor and perpetuator of that North London style, which is a hardness coat. Anyway, so there was this thing where you were the process of cold turkey withdrawal symptoms all seemed to be quite good. That's what rock stars did. They were in withdrawal from heroin and sort of sexier drugs like that. But that you could create that thing with fags and booze and the delirium tremens of alcoholism, uh-huh. which did continue to have a kind of chic. With coffee, it's the lowest version. It's like the office wonk, the lower middle class commuter office belt person.
Don't talk to me until I've had my coffee.
Yeah, and then they go, and then they've got to get their coffee because they've got to try and inhabit this space of victimhood and addiction.
I don't think it's a victim thing. I don't think it's a victim thing.
Okay,
I think it's the bourgeois just trying to have an edge. Although someone sent me a quote from Flaubert this morning.
Did you say Flaubert?
I did, Flaubert.
That's how you're going to go with the Flaubert pronunciation.
How am I supposed
or
to say
Flaubert? Flaubert. Gustave Flaubert.
You want me to say Flaubert?
I do.
Flaubert.
Yeah.
That philosopher, Flaubert.
He's a novelist.
Oh, he's a novelist.
You thought he was a philosopher. Remind me when you did your English degree again.
Oh.
Do you know what Flaubert wrote?
Madame Bovary.
Yeah, was that a philosophy? I'm sorry, I mustn't be too patronising. No, I must. I mean, what, it's not a philosophy thing, is it? Madame Bovary, which you've read, of course.
Anyway, shut up. Someone sent me a very good quote from
French
him this morning.
Old French slag who does arsenic and dies, is the summary.
Someone sent me a quote from Flaubert that said, "You must be bourgeois in all aspects of your life and save your violence for your art." Which I thought was really good.
I thought
because
was...
I am the most bourgeois person in the world and occasionally feel a little bit guilty and lame because of it. But now Flaubert has given me total license to be entirely bourgeois and save my violence for my art. That's I'm gonna go at it with renewed
that
confidence.
That is fucking cool, actually, because Flaubert is what 1870. You're the expert. 1870s, 1880s. I think.
Fuck you. Fuck you.
So I think, and I think Flaubert was one of the things with him was that he was famously well dressed and suits and all that kind of thing. And that is the early Bohemians before the modernists who went really sort of wah-wah.
Loosened their corsets.
But if you think, another great example of that is T.S. Eliot. You know, famously looks like a bank manager, writes like a fucking mentalist.
Right, yeah.
You know, explodes the English language on the bank. Bit like me, except I just write like a buttoned-up twat as well. I've become the other way around. I sort of dress like a wanker and do drugs and stuff and then write terribly formal, boring prose.
You don't do drugs anymore, do
you? Not anymore, no.
No, because, I mean, here it is. Here it is. Here is the bourgeois pretending to be...
I'm trying to make myself sound exciting. The point about the...
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
So, and that's the thing, the coffee cycle. Other people will talk about there is a coffee booze cycle. And you think you don't drink that much. People, you don't. You know how much you drink. But Western people, you've drunk every night this week, and I haven't.
Don't booze shame me.
Have you been sleeping well, darling?
That's unrelated.
Really?
No, I fucking haven't.
Oh, you're finishing the bottle of wine. I'll see you at 3 in the morning complaining that your husband who doesn't snore is snoring because you need an excuse.
You snore so loudly.
No, blame it on me. Blame it on the foxes. But little Mr. Wine has certainly got more to do with it than anything else. Anyway, but what happens is there is a cycle where you drink, obviously you drink, you sleep slightly less well, you just do, whether you wake up or you don't. One glass of wine, it keeps your body temperature up, you don't sleep quite well. You wake up, I mean you don't drink coffee, and then coffee and you're sorted.
Why does everyone need a coffee to do anything? It's pathetic. And it's not coffee, it's, although you have made this point before, cups of milk,
hot milk. I really need a coffee, just like Johnny, just like Sid Vicious needed his
smack.
I need a coffee.
Yeah.
And
I
then
am
they
an,
go
I am
and
an
order.
Artist.
They go
I'm
and
an
order
artist.
What is basically a fucking Ovaltine.
It is.
It's not.
Yeah.
It's not an actual coffee. It's not an actual. And there's big sloppy drinks. The other day, I went for a walk in the park, and
everyone's got a dog
on a Sunday morning. Everyone's got a dog and a big milky coffee. People don't. I mean, okay, fine. The dogs is a separate thing. Take your dog for a walk. That's fine. Why do people go to Hampstead Heath and walk around the lake and up the hill holding a coffee? You can't really walk properly.
Yeah.
You're just holding this thing. You have to stop to drink or you burn your mouth or pour it down your front. But that is, people think you buy a coffee and take it for a walk.
And also, actual coffee nations like, well, I don't know, Italy and France and, I don't know...
Brazil
or, you know, places where coffee is kind of, you know, like a more of a way of life than... Although, I mean, we've had coffee here for a long time, but they sort of do it in a slightly more sophisticated way. I don't think they buy a giant frothy thing and take it for a walk, do they?
No, I don't think an Italian would take his coffee for a walk.
No, I mean,
they don't take dogs for walks either. They have tiny... here we go, that's what happens. The French, the Italians, they have teeny-weeny little
tiny
dogs that never leave the apartment and little strong espressos that they drink at the counter. We have giant fluffy dogs that we have to take for walks and giant fluffy coffees that we have to take for walks.
Yes,
because we're just looking for things to take for walks.
And also, we believe too much that our homes really are our castles, but our homes are actually very rickety, narrow townhouses and you can't have a giant dog or a giant coffee. But I mean, even Sam. I picked up Sam up because he was in some concert, and we went to a cafe to wait until he had to go back and sort of tune up his drums or whatever it was. And I said, "So what are you going to have?"
How musical we are.
Yeah.
Sam's going to be at the concert. Just got to tune his drums. Gee, bung. Get out the tuning fork. We've got to get some blind guy around to tune the drum kit. That's not a middle C. Sorry.
Poor old Sam.
They all did the school concert. The school concert was the funniest thing.
What?
I held it together until the oboes.
All these terribly serious little boys going.
It was so sweet. It was unbelievable. Their cheeks are sort of puffed out, like, and they and every so often one of them would go.
Well, because it didn't really.
And I was there, and the lights were really bright, so everyone could see the parents. And I was laughing, and I was holding my hands over my face, and I was laughing so hard, I was shaking my ribs. It was terribly, terribly funny.
I went to Sam in the school outstanding musician competition, and it was like going into a room full of people killing cats. Yeah. And these were like, I was wondering where the slightly less outstanding musicians were. And
I think they're all very, very good.
You ever go on a Friday morning when they're playing the violins?
Oh my God, that's so funny. I can't do that. I guess.
No, but
they are brilliant. Look, play the violin and the oboe, they're incredibly difficult. No, they're brilliant. They're very, very good boys. No,
This is the point about our wonderful school, where they provide music for everybody. And in any year, and they're very proud that everybody gets to grade 10 and 11 different years. But in any year of 150 boys, 2 might be gifted.
Right.
10 will be competent, and the rest do it anyway.
The rest are just
it's a bit the same. It's the same as the sports. I go to watch. I go to watch Sam playing cricket, and there's 140 boys. Sam's in the first team, and they're all playing cricket, and it looks a bit like cricket. Down in the ninth 11, they've all got pristine kit, and they're playing on a beat, and they don't know which way to run. They're like pigs scattering before a collie. Yeah, they're just playing. They're playing it with ball. Mm. Same thing with the music. It's very sweet.
I was going to make some stupid point about Sam and coffee, but it's boring. So
no, make it.
No, it was dull. It was about how even Sam, age 9, knows that. I said we were in this cafe waiting to go into the school concert. And I said, what are you going to have, Sam? Do you want to, you're going to have a cappuccino, a baby chino? You're going to have a hot chocolate? And he went, no frothy drinks after midday, Mum.
Did he say that?
Yeah.
Oh, my boy. That's like when I said to him, no, it wasn't even me. Someone at school, the headmaster said, Sam, so you're looking forward to the T20? And he just went, that's pyjama cricket, sir. I don't watch that. It's not proper cricket. They play cross-bat shots. The idea that he set his stall against sort of T20 cricket, frothy drinks, no doubt The Guardian, dogs, non-organic steak.
No frothy milk after midday, Mum.
No, that's bloody.
I was like, fine. Yeah, quite right.
There'll be more from Esther and me in our kitchen after a short interlude. But to find out what I wrote about in the end, why not pick up a subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times and enjoy 1 month absolutely free? Just search thetimes.co.uk/Giles Corran has no idea. I've been promised that this will take you to an amazing offer, rather than just a website created by Ben randomly containing all my broadcasting mistakes. Although I'm sure that exists somewhere, it's just going to be up to you to find it.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I really want to know about your John Lewis dragon story, which you've been teasing me with since 8:30 a.m. Are you not got the energy for it now?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
It basically is it a thing that annoyed me in the paper.
Okay, go on then.
And I guess it comes from the place where, sorry, I just licked my finger for no apparent reason and there was something very salty on it. Yeah, John Lewis ad copied my dragon, says author. It comes from a place where I'm annoyed by everyone suing everyone.
Right.
You know you have it in the music industry where they go...
All the time, copied my
every
hook.
And they find a song from 9 years ago and he said, yeah, they used two guitars and a drum kit. So
I wrote at length about an Ed Sheeran court case and it was just pathetic. And they do it because the singer will just settle. Ed Sheeran was sued once and he settled. And then he was sued again and he was like, I've got to take this to court because if I don't, I'm just going to have... It's just going
to I want to bring this story to the attention of John Lewis's lawyers. Mm-hmm. I'm no particular... I mean, you're a massive John Lewis kind of...
John Lewis till I die.
...slave, aren't you?
Like, very literally John Lewis.
Tattooed in there. Yep. But and I'm not that fussed. But in this case...
Even though everything you own...
Jousting began in the High Court, writes someone who likes a medieval method.
No, who is it by?
Jonathan Ames.
This week, legal editor John
in the Times, jousting began in the High Court this week over a couple of dragons after the author of a children's book claimed that John Lewis had stolen her fire-sneezing creation for its Christmas TV commercial. Now, I think someone has successfully sued the John Lewis ad people, haven't they? Someone did an a cappella version of a song that was a version of a song or something.
That
and someone,
was the one when someone was in Living on the Moon, I think.
God, whatever it was. They're all these fucking ass. Anyway, listen. A writer called Faye Evans, who I'm sure is marvellous, has said that the alleged similarities between her dragon Fred the Fire Sneezer and excitable Edgar, who featured in the 2019 Christmas advertising campaign for John, she's been simmering over this for 3 years. Without evidence of copying. The author said that the ad bears a striking similarity to her debut. I mean, Fred the Fire Sneezer, published in 2017, appearing for Evans, Kendall Watkinson told the court, the dragons in issue are lone dragons integrated into human society, but they irritate the humans due to their uncontrollable fiery emissions.
Yeah.
Okay. As does every dragon in every story ever written for children. Her story is about... John Lewis is one that the dragon sneezes and out comes fire and it's a problem. Watkinson said the storylines shared, quote, various destructive fire-breathing incidents, including the demolition of snowmen, but in the end, the plot lines ended with the dragons using their breath to cook food for grateful humans, as happens in 1972's The Laughing Dragon by Ken Mahood, which was a book that Ken Mahood was a friend of my dad's. He worked at Punch with him. I got it signed to me from Ken Mahood. And it's a story in which a dragon in ancient Japan, he comes to the emperor's palace and they love him at first, but whenever he laughs, he flames. And he burns things down. He eventually burns down the palace. They have to send him. The emperor bans the telling of jokes because this otherwise lovely dragon accidentally burns things. They send him to an island where he's very sad and doesn't breathe fire. And then there's a cold snap. A 2-year winter comes to Japan. Everything's gone. They need the dragon back. They get him back. A little tortoise is appointed to tell him jokes until he laughs and laughs and laughs and brings summer back to the land. And it ends with him using his fire to flame pancakes, to cook pancakes for the emperor. Exactly the same as thing, exactly the same as this. And I want that precedent. I want the John Lewis lawyers, do you hear me, to cite Ken Mahood's The Laughing Dragon, because it's the same story. And what's sad is that this writer... Evans, she thinks her dragon looks like the dragon in the John Lewis ad because they're both chubby and green with little wings, like all dragons in every children's story. And it's the belief in the originality, the belief that you can get something off John Lewis with the similarity of it. It's just, you know.
Why has this made you so annoyed? Because I think she does have a point, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I do.
It makes me annoyed because I feel slightly sorry for Ken Mahood because this book has been overlooked, which he wrote 55 years ago.
Okay.
And that should be the... I don't know. I just thought that's rubbish. That's what children's stories are all the same. This does not excite you at all. Although you could say it in the context of this next story because I don't think we've got much on her.
What is it?
The fact that the children at the King Henry VIII school in...
Abergavenny.
Voted to keep his name.
Mm-hmm. Rather than calling it the... Abergavenny Learning Centre.
It's true.
Abergavenny Learning Centre.
Abergavenny Learning Centre. Where did you go to school then? Oh, I'm up to Henry VIII. But can you imagine I go to the Abergavenny Learning Centre? They don't want the word learning in there because it's triggering for them because they don't want to think about the notion they have
and
to
children learn,
more
on TikTok anyway.
And anyway, Henry VIII, think about Henry VIII, is he was Welsh, isn't it? Wasn't he? Isn't it?
Was
you
he?
Know that, you're a Welsh person. Where do you think the fucking Tudors come from?
Henry
the VII...
Oh, yeah, he was
Henry VII was a Tudor.
Who was the Black Prince? Wasn't he Welsh?
Michael Jackson? What are you talking about? The Black Prince was like Edward the... Oh, the Black Prince was like...
And there was a...
The Black Prince
well.
Was a Prince of Wales who didn't get to be king in about 1340, I think. And he wasn't black. I think he wore black armour. Mm-hmm. But anyway, the point about Henry VIII was a Welshman. So Henry VII was a Welshman. He invaded, took over the crown from...
Was it a Richard the Third?
Richard the Third, exactly.
At Bosworth.
Exactly, at the Battle of Bosworth.
You're sliding into...
Exactly. Accrington Stanley, who are they?
What's that?
Rebecca Vardy, you're a bitch.
We're doing a tour.
To be fair, Welsh people are the closest people geographically.
To Liverpool.
No, it's Ireland. Now, Ireland is a whole different kettle of fish.
It really is.
Isn't Liverpool quite near Wales? I don't know.
I think when you get to North Wales, East Wales is probably shading into Liverpool, yeah.
Yeah, who knows?
Or maybe Birmingham.
Who cares? Birmingham.
Birmingham.
Nowhere near.
That's in the middle, isn't
That's
it?
That's near Wolverhampton. Just up from Portsmouth.
But look, Abergavenny.
The point about Abergavenny. So anyway, they're Welsh people. So that was the last time the Welsh people ruled England, I see. Henry VII was a Welshman, and his child, Henry VIII, was a Welshman. So to a Welsh person, the fact that he's a fat bigamist is neither here nor there, you see. Because he's a Welshman lording it over the English.
And he's ginger.
So the point is, they're trying to exclude, they're trying to get rid of Henry VIII. Because you know, they got rid of Francis Drake, we talked about the other week, and Francis Drake, our feelings at the end were, yeah, he was a pirate. He did
pirate.
Profit from a lot of slavery. Yeah.
And the Francis Drake makes it sound like a pub.
It does. And also, and in the end, I'm changing my view slightly, that thing about colonialism and slavery and all that, because it didn't personally affect me. Mm-hmm. And I shit my pants over the Holocaust at the drop of a hat.
But
I'm not... A black of Caribbean descent and or African through Caribbean or America, and if you live it every day, and then these people, it's like they put massive statues and
they're all saying hooray,
Francis Drake, right? He just played a bit of bowls and he just sold Africans.
Yeah.
So actually, fuck Francis Drake. But Henry VIII was pre-colonial. He didn't ever have time to do any slavery.
Phew.
They didn't have any of that. But he executed his wives, and he was.
Because he was in a bad mood because his legs hurt, as established.
Yeah. Also, we have great sympathy for him because of his obesity, which wasn't his fault. It was all the fault of the multinationals selling him the junk food.
Well, that's my argument in the iPaper this week, certainly.
Really?
So, this fits into my theory that younger Gen Z and Gen X are...
No, Gen A.
Sorry, you're quite right. Gen A.
Do you want to go again? Do you want to reveal...
No,
allow
I don't
Ben to leave that in and reveal your lack of grasp of... The generations?
Unlike you, I could not care less if people think I'm clever or not. I don't care. I'd rather people thought I was a bit thick. I honestly would. That's fine by me. I think being a bit thick is glamorous.
So why did you spend the last podcast boasting about your IQ?
I know, because I wanted to show everyone that it doesn't mean anything.
You'd recently discovered it was 7 points higher than you'd always thought. And are you now worried about...
But how much of a dimwit have I was to look at it and then, like, forget the number?
Someone whose IQ clearly isn't as high as this reading clue.
I think I should get it tested again to
the other thing is,
the true number.
Now that you know that your IQ turns out to be 142, not 135...
When I was seven.
Do you feel that perhaps you've underachieved? Do you think you were doing fine for someone with an IQ of 135?
No, because yes, well, I...
But for 142, you should have done more.
No, but I've got a shitty attitude and I'm lazy.
All us clever people have. But an IQ of 135 probably means puts you in a sort of 1 in 500. But an IQ of 142 is going to make you about 1 in 300. I mean, you're quite a lot more special. You move up the ranks. Is it okay that you're not doing as well as...
I don't know who. Sorry.
Basically anyone else. There was a really good episode of 30 Rock where Jenna Mulroney starts a rumour that she's 50.
Why?
So that everyone's like, oh my God, she looks so incredibly young. So I see what you're saying, yeah.
But people don't know your IQ.
Well, they do now, because I've told everyone, although no one cares.
But I personally don't think you've sort of set your parameters around a kind of 135 ballpark area, where being a sort of down desk features hack and occasional podcaster is enough.
Well,
whereas at 142, you should probably maybe take charge of the family investments now that you understand.
Yeah, but that's not fun.
It's not about fun.
What is it about?
It's about intellectual rigour. You've been listening to Giles Corran Has No Idea with me, Giles Corran.
And me, Esther Walker.
It's a Wireless Studios production for The Times, produced by Ben Mitchell. You can listen to us on The Times radio app or download from wherever you get your podcasts.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.